So the intention is to, I don't know how many weeks this is going to take, but I think the first thing I'd like to address is why a series on marriage. And I this class maybe started 10 years ago, 11 years ago, something like that, where we really just were like laying the foundation of what is biblical counseling and some of the principles of biblical counseling. I think it's kind of morphed into issues of biblical counseling. So I don't know that we've really done one specifically on marriage through that 10 years. I don't know if you guys remember or not. I don't know that we really have. So why this series now? And I think probably the best way to explain it is maybe 6 months to 9 months ago, I started doing some counseling with an out-of-state counseling center. And they'd asked me to do the first counseling session for the men who send in counseling forms and for marriages where there was a couple who were coming for marriage counseling. They wanted me to do the first session, like a half an hour, 45 minute, to kind of get what are the issues, to do what they call initial care assessment. So I've been doing that for 6+ months, I think, something like that. And I've learned a lot through it. And one of the things I did not expect were the number of couples who were 50 to as old as almost 80 years old who were coming for counseling. And it was marriage counseling. And their marriage was in really bad shape. I kind of expect that. And there are some younger couples, but 25% of the people I talk to are that demographic. They've been married 30, 35 plus years, up to as many as 55 years. And there's trouble. So I just thought about that a lot. Like what's going on? Why are they having trouble? That didn't happen overnight, right? Like this wasn't something that just popped up. There have been foundational habits and ways of thinking that have been going on for years and years in that marriage that have brought cracks into the foundation and have brought them to where they're at. But these are grandparents. They're some of them retired, some of them almost retired. They should be in the most enjoyable time of their life in terms of their marriage. It should be the golden years aren't always golden. There's physically reasons for that. Some of you older people here can understand that, but it's just not the way it should be. Now, thankfully, they are reaching out for help. So typically, it is, we're not connected. We're emotionally distant. We don't really know each other. Not sure we like each other. The man typically is more ready to get back on track than the woman, and I think it's because she understood years ago that there was trouble. He's just now understanding it. Women understand relationally related things better than men. And so I thought, you know what? We need to be doing more preventative counseling or preventative teaching. Like we need to be rooting out those foxes in the vineyard. We'll talk about what that means here in a little bit. Or pulling the weeds out of our marriage now so that we're not like those people then when we get there. And so that's really kind of my motive for this, is like that's probably happening in our church and couples in our church as well. And I don't want you to just, if issues come up in your marriage, I don't want you to be discouraged about reaching out to someone. I think a lot of these couples did not reach out when they should have earlier. And in almost every case, when I would ask them, did you do premarital counseling? Of course, a lot of them, that was not a big thing years and years ago. Or what have you done since to cultivate marriage and as a husband or as a wife? And almost invariably, basically nothing. But a lot of these people are in churches. Some of them have been elders, deacons, pastors, one pastor. This is a long ways away, so nobody's going to know anything. I mean, this is not, I'm not breaking any confidentiality here. But I just wanted to have a class that's preventative and proactive, I guess would be another way. It's a buzzword from years back, but like get on it before it gets to the place where some of these people are at. I just wanted to read some quotes for you from some of these people. This is for a couple who's been married 55 years. This is the husband. I have much more time available to rebalance my life, and I want to place work at the bottom and God and family at the top. Now, what do you think that means? He hasn't been. He's 77 years old, and he's in really bad health as well. So, like, there's regret there. But what do you think his wife is, what that's been like for her all those years? Where? Anyway. Here's another one. Help us work through the issues and get a fresh start. Which is not a bad thing, but help me in my relationship and how to stop anger. How to deal with stress and anger. The emotions are too high in our home. Another one. I want our marriage back. I retire in a few years. Another one said, I want us to go to church together. I want my wife to trust me. Here's from a man who's in his 60s. I've had pornography and communication issues. Help me save my marriage. And it's been going on for a long time. We are in a roommate phase. We need to work together, not against each other. I remember asking one couple, what do you guys fight about? And they said, everything. I said, everything? Yeah, everything. Okay. So we need to work together, not against each other. Help me, this is from a man, help me with my selfishness and insensitivity. And this comes from men all the time. Guys, we must be prone to being insensitive and selfish. One guy said, I have marriage issues. I've been talking to other women. Another one, we have been distant from one another for years. We've only lived at a surface level. They also said we fight about everything. And over again, somewhere in those is, I feel disconnected from my spouse. Something to that effect. So I wanted to kind of address some of these things in a way that hopefully that's positive and helpful to us who are married. And again, I think all these kinds of things we're going to talk about will be helpful in any relationship that you're involved in. I just want to give you on your sheet that you should have. They're back there. If you don't have one. Kind of done the introduction, like why a series on marriage. I'd like to skip down to a counseling case, and I just named it Jack and Jill. And this is a composite. This particular case is about, I just brought in several different things. So at the bottom of the first page, I have counseling case wisdom, Jack and Jill. This is a typical marriage. Jack is 67 years old. He and Jill have been married 43 years. Jack's going to retire soon. He became a Christian in his 30s, but Jill has been a Christian since shortly after their marriage. She became a Christian first. She is 100% in on her faith. She has a strong personality, and Jack has a more passive approach. And this is really typical in situations that we're seeing. This has been a source of conflict much of their marriage. Her more into the faith, more aggressive, more a strong personality. He's been passive, hasn't been the leader that he should have been. Jack tends to shut down and avoid addressing issues. So they don't ever come to any resolutions on any of their conflicts. They describe their relationship as civil. Sad. Civil. Lacking connection and devoid of intimacy. Both physical, 15 years, ongoing, and lack of intimacy spiritually and emotionally. Jack was recently convicted by a sermon that he needed to lead in recovering their stale marriage. So he's reached out, and these are all true. Jill Mike later, but she is a 5 on committed to her marriage. He is a 9. So that's kind of what we, that's a typical situation. So I want to look at Song of Solomon 2:15, and I want to approach this from the same angle that John Henderson, who wrote the book Catching Foxes, some of you might be familiar with this. This is actually what a lot of us use, do premarital counseling. We'll use this book. It is a premarital counseling book. It's called Catching Foxes by John Henderson. And he bases this book off of Song of Solomon 2:15, catch all the foxes, those little foxes, before they ruin the vineyard of love, for the grapevines are blossoming. And he says, every marriage has little foxes lurking inside it. We all have idols and selfish appetites, and like the foxes in Solomon's vineyard, they can cause untold destruction and heartache. In fact, how seriously a couple takes their own foxes will influence whether their marriage blooms and glorifies God, or is a shallow and pale imitation of the real thing. So I want to kind of launch the series here with that little metaphor of foxes in the vineyard or foxes in your marriage. Or Paul Tripp, who wrote a book, What Did You Expect? He would say, pull the weeds out of your garden as well, because weeds choke out fruitfulness and productivity. So use whichever one you want. I'm using the fox as a one because that's literally a scriptural description. So we'll kind of be referring to that off and on, like where the fox is in my marriage. So basically what I want to do is like find out what those foxes are, identify them, and here's what we put off, and here's what we put on. So we don't want to just talk about what we need to quit doing or what rooted out. We also, what do we begin to do? What new thinking should we have, and what new habits and way of thinking should we develop? So the series objective is remove the foxes that are destroying the vineyard, the marriage relationship, and replace with scriptural and practical principles that will bring about a blossoming marriage that glorifies God. So what do you guys think are some foxes that typically invade marriage? What would you say?
Selfishness would be a big one.
Okay.
I think self first, spouse second.
Yeah. And that's one we're gonna cover the next time we meet, is selfishness. And I think I got three resources up here. I think it's in The Complete Husband that Lou Priolo says that selfishness is the biggest marriage killer, relationship killer of all. So you're right on. I chose to address it second, and we'll get to that next time. 2 weeks, which I think next week we're all church Sunday school. Oh, I'm thinking of it. So good, selfishness. Yeah, that'll take a whole hour to cover.
Bitterness?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Bad communication?
Mm-hmm. Or lack.
Lack of? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in 50% of those. We don't communicate. Yeah. We don't talk. Call that possibly idolatry, like something's more important. Yeah. Lack of wrong priority.
Unmet expectations, I think it
says. Is there a book by that name? For sure. So good one, Lenny. All these are good. If you want to read another kind of companion unmet expectation. It's not intentional. But Paul Tripp's book, What Did You Expect? Whew. Really good. There's probably only one or two couples in here that would remember maybe 12, 15 years ago, we were going through pretty regularly with young married, what did you expect, Paul Tripp's video series, like six sessions, and it had a handout, and that was really helpful. So there's a condensed version of this. I'd actually recommend that, even if you're just want to go through something that'll that'll show you some foxes in your vineyard you probably didn't know about. I actually thought about bringing it, but it's the old, I think they're, are they cassettes, Maria, or are they DVD? I think there are DVDs. Yeah, I have a copy if you want to use it. But yeah, so unmet expectations, for sure.
Under that, like that, I think that's a big umbrella.
It is.
Like how we're gonna deal with our finances, how we're gonna deal with our parenting, how ministry, how we're gonna do ministry.
Yeah.
You might have an idea or an ideal.
Yeah.
I'd put pornography in there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot
for
of
sure.
guys feel like marriage will fix the pornography problem.
It's a big lie Satan tells, but yeah.
Other relationships outside of the marriage could be other family members.
Yeah, I think it's right to put extended family and in-laws as well. I didn't bring into that particular case that I have, but there's been several instances of that. It's amazing how that can become a big issue, especially with more blended families than ever. I think maybe 50 plus, 60 plus years ago, there wouldn't have been as many of those, but you have they're my kids or they're your kids, and just, yeah, all those things to untangle. This might have been kind of along what Brianna was saying, busyness, just wrong priorities or busyness with work or sports, or I put down child-centered parenting as well. So many families will devote the bulk of their time to their children, to their activities, to their what's going on with them, and not to their own relationship as husband and wife, and then the kids are gone and look at each other and, oh, we've spent the last 20 years chasing our kids around and doing what they're doing. I put laziness down. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you this. If you see somebody that has a good marriage, it's not by accident. They work at it. And there's a lot of people who don't want to work at it. Too selfish. Mm-hmm. Laziness and selfishness go together. Laziness is being very selfish, for sure. Inattention. I don't have to pay attention to you anymore because I have you now. Kind of attitude that wouldn't be said that way, but Lou Priolo in his book Complete Husband says that that's the number one mistake men make. They pursue their girl, but once they're married, it's like they're off pursuing something else. So they neglect and don't pay attention to their wife anymore. Today may come across a little bit like I'm a little bit harder on the guys than I am the women, and that's kind of intentional. Okay? So, the homework, which we call hope work at Low Country, right, is for guys today. There'll be some for the wives later on, but not today. So I think that's a mistake men make, husbands make, is they're we're all pursuit-driven, goal-driven, you know. I've got her now, but not to pursue her anymore. Christ doesn't quit pursuing his bride. He's always initiating and pursuing. Anybody else have any foxes?
kind of to go along with that, there's apathy and that kind of a, when you get to that point, like, I pursued my wife, we're married, and then there's choices to be made. You feel like I have, you'll make the other choice instead of pursuing your wife more because you feel like that's kind of shored up, right? And then, so I can sacrifice that for this for now because I think it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
After years and years of that, then it just, yeah.
That's exactly right, after years and years of that.
So there's those little compromises that I think we're tempted to make as men because I think it's going to be okay in the short term. I think make that choice.
After all, I need
right.
to be providing,
yeah.
right? And I need to be doing this. This is loving my family too. But all those years after years, she knows that it's not what it should be. He doesn't. That's so common. That's why you'll hear sometimes the guy's surprised. Really? Yeah. You can see it coming.
I think the wife could do that too. Children are everything.
So yes.
Set aside, working, busy with friends, whatever.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. Husbands can be neglected too. I appreciate it. No question about it. It goes both ways. We're the race of Adam and Eve. We all sin.
What about fear of rejection?
Fear of man?
Fear of rejection.
Fear of rejection. Good one. We're going to get to that in a little bit as we go forward in here. I have talked about these in, I think, self-righteousness. Pride is another one I put down, another one we're going to address, probably third or fourth in line. There can be a self-righteousness, there can be a legalistic, almost perfectionistic fox that can come into a marriage where my spouse must be perfect or, you know, to the point where they bear out sin against me kind of thing that can go on. The first one I want to talk about, we haven't even talked about yet, is what I think is number one. Selfishness is right there. But it's relational distance. That's more of a symptom. So we're going to get to what is at the bottom of relational distance. So on the second page, foxes to be identified, removed, and replaced. I'm going to put relational distance. It's really sad to talk to these couples and they're just not close. There's just not a lot of love. There isn't a lot of affection. And it's really sad. So I want to lay the groundwork for what I mean here. Marriage was designed by God among several things. I'm not saying this is the only thing. It's, I think, one of the primary things. It was to deal with the issue of being alone. Because we read this, then the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I'll make him a helper suitable for him. You actually can read in some translations that God said, the man's alone. Like, all the animals have a companion, but he doesn't. So that's not good. So he said, I'll make him a helper suitable for him. God made most of us so that we would be lonely without an intimate companion with whom to live. This is kind of amazing how our culture has went. We have a vet clinic in town now called Companion Care. Like pets are companions for people. The intention is, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but the intention is that you have a human intimate companion with whom to live. God provided Eve not only, or even primarily as Adam's helper, though help is also one dimension of companionship, but he provided Eve as his companion. And that's a quote from Complete Husband by Lou Priolo. So marriage is described in terms of companionship. And let's turn to Proverbs 2:17. So Proverbs 2:17, your translation may have a slightly different word. This is talking about a woman to be delivered from, an immoral woman, in verse 16. In verse 17 it says, who forsakes the companion of her youth. She forsakes the companion of her youth. And in this context, this word translated companion has the idea of one that has a close, intimate relationship to another. So she was forsaking the close, intimate relationship she had with her husband. She was an immoral woman. She was forsaking this close, intimate relationship. Let's look at Malachi 2:14. Which, if you know the book of Malachi, you know it deals with divorce in chapter 2. Malachi 2:14 says, yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. In Malachi 2:14, the word translated companion has as its kernel idea that of union or association. I think the word union is like you're unified, you're one, you're intimately together, you're associated in a union. A companion is one who enters into a close union or relationship with another. So I like this description. A companion, therefore, is one with whom you're intimately united in thoughts, goals, plans, efforts, and in the case of marriage, in bodies. And in order to develop, maintain, and nurture companionship in marriage, something of great significance is required. And this is the fox that I don't think people understand. It's revelation. You have to have revelation. What's the opposite of revelation? Covering, concealing, hiding. That's the fox that is most dangerous, that keeps us from having a close, intimate, emotional, affectionate relationship. So I'm getting this, a lot of this material that's right in this area right here from The Complete Husband book. And I've read quite a few husbanding books. This is my favorite. I know there's others out there that are really, really good. And I've told many, many men, if you read chapter 1 of The Complete Husband and you get it and you put it into practice, you'll be fine. Okay? And it's because of this material right here that we're talking about. So revelation is a prerequisite for having a relationship. And he goes into some detail about how if we didn't have the Word of God, could we have a relationship with Jesus Christ or with God? No, we couldn't. There has to be revelation. So we have the book, the Bible is literally God's revelation of himself to man. It's a lot, right? There's a lot out there, but that's what it is. God's revelation to man of who he is. And so, to the same degree that two people reveal themselves to each other, they will be able to have an intimate relationship with each other. So as revelation or revealing goes up, your trust goes up, your intimacy goes up, and your emotional enjoyment goes up. And the opposite of that's true. If you don't reveal, trust is not there. There's suspicion. There's avoidance, and there's concealing. So it's this simple, be a revealer, not a concealer. That is the key to relational intimacy, and I believe the key to a long, happy, joyful marriage. I think they're possible. When Marie and I do premarital counseling, that's one thing we stress is like marriage is fun. Marriage is good. It can be really, really good. But I don't think our culture really comes across that way. And that's tragedy. I think in its natural state, it's going to be miserable, right? We know that. Look at Adam and Eve, how they were distancing themselves from each other and from God. after they sin. So, continuing on the quote here towards the bottom of that page, to the same degree that two people reveal themselves to each other, they will be able to have an intimate relationship with each other. To the extent that two people refuse or neglect to reveal themselves to each other, their ability to have an intimate relationship with others will be hindered. Be a revealer, not a concealer. On every level, physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, etc., husband and wife should be naked and unashamed. Now, what were Adam and Eve after the sin? Were they naked and unashamed? They did what? They covered and concealed, and they were ashamed. So many people come into marriage that way, concealing, covering, and shame. I know David Pallison, a well-known biblical counselor, is gone now, Ed Welch, said 90% of people he talks to in a counseling room bring shame to the counseling room. Like, shame is a really big thing. But we are to be naked and unashamed. We are to be, here I am, and I'm not ashamed, right? But that's not who we are. So I think a lot of what goes on in marriage is just covering up. And I've heard it said that you may see the best in the person during your dating, you know, like put them their best foot forward, but you really don't know someone. I think marriage is the greatest sanctifying tool there is until kids come along, and then I think kids are the next. You guys got any questions so far? I think Genesis 2:25 is really a key text that Adam and Eve were naked and unashamed. Then Adam hid himself because he was afraid. They sewed some fig leaves, tried to cover up, and
they blamed each other.
Yeah, conflict between husband and wife, we see it real early. And they tried to hide because they wanted to distance themselves from God. And they probably were hiding from each other. Not be surprised, because they were blaming each other. So things weren't good for them at that point. So I want to talk about, for the rest of our time, some hindrances to intimacy. I think that's on page 3 for you. Lou Priolo says, some of these are from Lou Priolo, this one is, perhaps the greatest hindrance to revelation is fear. We're afraid. Genesis 3:7-10, God asked Adam, where are you? He said, I was afraid. So fear, I hid myself. Because I was naked, so I hid myself. I think we're afraid for our spouse to know us at certain levels. So fear keeps us from opening up. Lou Priolo says, husbands and wives are often stricken with fear and hide their true selves from each other when they consider the sinfulness of their own hearts. And by the way, don't hear me saying that you should tell every sinful thought that you ever have. Somebody hears me saying that, that would be very dangerous as well. Your spouse may come to hate you, actually. But I hope you know what I mean. There is a balance in there. Rather than concealing sin from each other, they ought to feel free to reveal their struggles with indwelling sin to each other in the hope of finding assistance to overcome it. The husband is the one who is to wash his wife with the water of God's word, and the wife, as her husband's helper, are to actively participate in each other's progressive sanctification progress. So, fear, is that a potentially a hindrance to you being more open with your spouse? Could be. Joe had mentioned selfishness, and we're going to make that actually one of the foxes as well. But selfishness, I think, is huge. People who are selfish are fearful, and fearful people are selfish. That's really the way it goes. 1 Corinthians 13:5 says, love does not seek its own, it's not selfish. So we're going to get a lot more, we're going to spend a whole time talking about selfishness because there's so much out there on that. I have personally, for my own counseling sake, condensed my own marriage counseling down to two words. Well, John, and the two words, conquer selfishness. That's it. That's what I tell husbands or men that are preparing to get married. Better conquer selfishness, or it's not gonna go well. When you allow fear of your wife's rejection, Nathan, you talked about rejection earlier, to keep you from loving her by not revealing her that which is biblically necessary for her to know about you, you are being selfish. You are at that moment, we're concerned about how such a revelation may somehow hurt you and about how it may help your wife. I think guys are more, ladies, you can help me on this, but I think guys by nature and by what we think as a man are more prone to not talking, not revealing, because men are tough, you know, and we pull ourselves up. What's that?
Don't want to be weak.
Yeah. Don't want to cry. Those kinds of things. I don't want my wife to see me as weak. That's not what a man does. It's not a John Wayne kind of man. Look, do you think King David cried? He did. He might have been the greatest warrior ever lived. That I'm supposed to be doing the reading today for our opening. It's in Psalm 56, and it talks about he put my tears in a bottle. So this whole idea of men don't cry and men don't share and they're not tender, they're tough. We're both. Men are both tender. Now, Paul said, I've come to you as a nursing mother. He talked about how he was also a father in 1 Thessalonians to them. Being open and sharing your heart isn't always viewed as a masculine trait. And if you buy into that, it's gonna crush your ability to relate intimately with your wife. The third one, also from Lou Priolo, is pride. I think pride is, I remember early on in our marriage, and I don't mind telling on myself, to a degree. But I think a couple of years in our marriage, I adopted something I actually got from somebody else. Like, it's good for husbands to occasionally just ask your wife, if you felt free to say anything you want to me and tell me anything, I want to give you that opportunity. So I would give Maria that opportunity. I think the very first time I did that, this is what she told me. So I told her, I said, you tell me some things that you'd like to say, but you don't feel comfortable saying, I'm giving you permission to say it. I will not respond. And first thing she told me was, you're defensive. Okay. That's pride. And she's right. So I thought about it a day or two, and then we'd come back and talk about it. So men, challenge you to do that. Trust your wife. It's not going to be criticism. We'll get to all that, some of all that later. But throw that out there. I think it's really wise to give your wife or your spouse. I can go the other way too. It should go the other way. A safe time and a safe place to do that. you're not going to respond immediately. So we practice that through the years, don't do as much as we used to. So need to continue it though. So yeah, pride is, Lou Pirillo said, pride is like AIDS. Pride blinds you not only to itself, but to every other sin tucked away in the recesses of your heart and life. It causes you to hate correction and reproof. It hides your sin from you. It justifies your sin. It excuses your sin. It keeps you from repenting of your sin. It deceives you into thinking that you are spiritually well when in fact you have a deadly cancer and are in desperate need of the great physician's cure. I love that. Like, pride will do all of that. So I think pride is a hindrance to revelation. Laziness. Great marriages don't just happen. I'm going to continue to say this. Great marriages are the fruit of those who intentionally work for it. You have to want to, and when you have two people who are really sold out to Christ and have taken up their cross and denied themselves and are following Him, who want to have a good marriage, it's the most fun on earth. Lou Pirillo says this about laziness. You may have to change from being a feeling-oriented person who does what he feels like doing and doesn't do what he doesn't feel like doing. You have to change to an obedience-oriented person who does what is biblically required, whether he feels like doing it or not. The way of the unway of the faithful is hard. That's from Proverbs 13:15. Another translation will say the way of the transgressor is hard. So you have a choice. Hard work now with the hope of God's blessing in the future, or an easy way now with the probability of a hard road to travel under God's discipline in the future. I think that's really true in marriage. Just do the work now with the hope of God's blessing, or put it off with the probability of a harder road down the road. A fifth hindrance to revelation revealing is ignorance. I think sometimes we just, we don't know, right? I think that's one reason why 1 Peter talks about live with your wife in an understanding way. I remember reading in a book, Sex, Romance, and the Glory of God by C.J. Mahaney, that he would take every Monday morning and he would spend like an hour at a coffee shop studying his wife, thinking about his wife and ways he could minister to her and trying to live with her in a way that was understanding. And he was not ignorant. I mean, that was hard work too, but that's, he was trying to figure out his wife. And man, our wives are different than us, and wives, your man is different than you, right? So I think sometimes ignorance stands in the way. That's why I really encourage all of us to read books on the subject of being a spouse, husband, and wife. I added two more hindrances to intimacy. Guilt. I think there's a lot of times there's guilt is brought into relationships, unconfessed sin. And I think the last one would be shame. Adam and Eve were originally, we talked about this, naked and unashamed. The gospel just removes shame. It really does. I think, talk to some of our women in this church, and I think shame is pervasive in a lot of our women. Could be in guys too. But I just wanted to read some scriptures. I didn't write them out, so I'm going to have to look them up here real quick. But Psalm 34:5. They looked to him and were radiant. Oh, I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. They looked to him and were radiant, and their faces were not ashamed. Got a got some more here, but I'll just read one more, read Romans 10:11. Getting that chapter here. For the scripture says, whoever believes on him will not be put to shame. Yet, there are Christians who have a lot of shame come with shame to the marriage bed, to the relationship. And I think it's a real hindrance to revelation. I'm ashamed to share. I'm ashamed to admit. And we shouldn't be. Our spouse should be that complete, safe place. Can you guys think of any other hindrances to revelation or intimacy or oneness?
Can guilt sometimes be the result of false shame? Can shame sometimes be the result of false guilt?
Absolutely.
When someone criticizes you continually and you get the sense of guilt about it, you know, thinking that you're not pleasing them.
That happens all the time. And you see that a lot in abusive relationships where somebody can guilt somebody, and it's not, there shouldn't be guilt there, but particularly on the woman's side, I see that a lot, or hear that a lot. So yeah, that's a whole subject in Change It Sticks, and in there's a lot of material out there on that, Peggy. That happens a bunch. People, unfortunately, live lives with a lot of guilt, unnecessary guilt, misplaced guilt, or guilt is just the breaking a transgression, breaking a commandment, and you're guilty of it. You're legally guilty of that. That's what it is. And if somebody makes you guilty of something you're not, or charges you for something you're not, then sometimes people will live with that, unfortunately. A couple minutes left. Does this make sense? Do you guys have any questions? Hope this isn't too heavy of a trip. Hope it's a really encouraging thing, actually. And if you're in a marriage where maybe this has been an issue, just take it a step at a time. You know, just go for it a little bit at a time. You have to plunge all the way in, put off that old habit of hiding and concealing and distancing and come together, come closer. There's a lot more we could talk about. I did hand out, or have handouts back there for men, that one of them is 10 questions that a man named Tom Eloff developed, that he goes on a retreat every year with his wife, and he asks her these 10 questions. And then Tim Bryant from Low Country has one on 50 questions that a husband can ask his wife. And men, just encourage you to do that. You have to ask all of them, go through there and pick out some. And sometimes people say, well, what should we talk about? Here's some things you can talk about. Biblical doctrine, our home, the children, my job, her family, her friends, her ministries, her goals, specific ways you can be a better husband, things that I do that bother you. I mean, you can talk about a lot of different things. A lot of smiles there. So another thing we're going to talk about is just having a home filled with grace. Grace instead of law. That would be nice. Every home was filled with love, grace, charity. It's the glory of a man to overlook a transgression instead of, oh, got to point out every time my spouse does something wrong. Okay. That's week one. Next week, all church Sunday school.